This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 370. 370. Unbelievable. I am going to turn on my air conditioning today because I have air conditioning today. I'm not sure how long I will have air conditioning, but I put the refrigerant in it. Supposedly has a bunch of stop leaking stuff in it. And I actually have a little cool air coming out of my vents, which is unusual for my little car. So I thought, you know what? This is great. I actually have a little air conditioning. So I thought I should take advantage of it. Uh-oh. There's someone stopped along the side of the road there, and they've got their hood up. If I knew anything about cars, I might stop to help them. I do not. I am terrible when it comes to cars. Someday, I would like to learn. I think it's a really fascinating thing. But not, I think, today, to quote Jean-Luc Picard. So anyways, it's been a very interesting week. I was hoping to hit 10,000 words last week. I, in fact, did hit 10,000 words last week. And, in fact, I hit more than 10,000 words to the point that I got to 30,000 words for 3 weeks. So I actually got caught up and was on average, you know. So, I mean, I was quite happy come Saturday because it was like, yes! Not only did I do that, I went ahead and I had everything edited up and ready to go for Sunday morning. So I was ready to start writing again. And I got that done last week, despite the fact that I had gone in to run sound. Let's see, I think that was when I had gone in to run sound on Wednesday, and I had gone on in to run sound on that Sunday, I think. So that had kind of chewed into my time, but got it done. It was good. I was happy. So come Sunday, then, I just plowed through a bunch of stuff on Sunday. I actually got about 3,700 words down on Sunday. The goal was 3,500, so that was good. It was good. Got into a little slowdown on Monday night. Didn't get near. I was supposed to get 1,000 words in, and I think I only got 500-ish or something like that. And then I was getting into writing on Tuesday night. No, wait. I was trying to get some writing done Monday night, and I got a phone call because they had been shifting some things over between servers. And our nightly process had just hung up. We weren't really sure exactly where. We knew what the step was, and that step was only supposed to take 5 minutes, and it was had already taken 30 minutes. So I hopped on, and they hopped on, and we looked and looked and looked and figured out what was going on, and we walked our way through getting it back on track and did that, got that going. Everything cleared. Great. So then we thought we had kind of fixed the problem, and then we tried it again Tuesday night. Lo and behold, it did exactly the same thing Tuesday night. So that was another 45 minutes or so that got chunked out of my time. And then last night, I'd sat down and I had started writing some. Got another phone call. This time, the problem was at the beginning step in the whole process, as opposed to, like, step six. So then we started digging. Found out where the problem was. Got that corrected. Found out that somebody had thought they were working with tables that weren't really used anymore. And had gone ahead and deleted the table, or we call it ZZ'd it out, which just means you put two Z's in front of it. ZZ'd out the table, and lo and behold, if we still relied on that table. Oh. And because of the way it failed, it had locked up all kinds of tables. I mean, it was just, it was not good. So, that one required a trip in. So it was, I don't know, it was like 10 o'clock at night when we made the decision that we were going to rendezvous in there and work through it. So I threw on some jeans and headed in, and we had the problem, we were both there about 10:30. We had the problem pretty well licked by 11. But then we had to start everything up, and we had to make sure that we got through the other steps, and so I think I got out of there about 12:20, you know, half past midnight, sometime in there. And then, of course, by the time I got home and by the time I got something, you know, got my teeth done and all that. I was going to say got something to eat, but I was not eating because it was Wednesday. Got my teeth done. It was like 1 o'clock by the time I finally got in bed. So, and then I was back up, which isn't a short night, but it's pretty short for me. I was back up just before 6 because I had breakfast with a friend this morning. And so I told them that work today, I'm going to work for a little bit, and then I'm going to write, and I'm going to try to get caught back up some of this time, and then I have a 3 o'clock meeting, and then after that, I'm going home. So I already have enough hours in for the month, and I left a little early. It's actually only about 3:30. And normally, you know, I don't leave there till at least 4:30. So, gonna go home, gonna have a little more time. I got some good writing done today while I was sitting there at work, and I had let them know I was gonna go off the clock so that people weren't walking by and seeing me working on my laptop and just seeing my novel up writing. But I told the man I answer to directly what I was doing. He said, that's fine. So I'm heading home, and the guy I was working with last night is heading out of town, but we think everything's going to run tonight without any problem. That's the plan. We're just going to let it run for a couple of nights good, and then we'll go back in and start monkeying with it again. So anyways, but God's good. We got it done. Got it done. You know, sometimes you're heading into those situations and you just have no idea what you're going to uncover. But we found it pretty fast, which I was grateful for. And then we knew exactly what to do from there. And then we have this wonderful dashboard report that I had built years ago. And it's not just because I built it. It really is wonderful. It balances everything to the penny. I mean, it cross-checks all sorts of stuff. And we can bring that up. And it's 2 pages worth of stuff. And all we have to do is look down the side. And if it says true, 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 as opposed to false, under the balanced column, we are good to go. And so having that is, man, it's wonderful. Because if you're just not certain that, you know, you did everything correctly and you don't want to take the 2 hours it would take to amass all that information and add it all up and, you know, do that whole thing, I mean, you just bring up this report and it's all there. So that has worked out great. So we got to the spot where we knew we could run that report, ran the report. The whole process went on for another half hour, 45 minutes. I just went home. Now, my buddy I was working with, he stayed for a little bit, but I just went home. Because we have a balancing report. So, anyways, writing is going good, and the work is going good. Of course, this was the big week that Beyonce released. Was it this week or last week? Anyways, I remember reading about it this week. And, you know, I mean, I read about this album, Lemonade, how she just, you know, brutal about the fact she's been betrayed, husband was sleeping around, and blah, 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 you know. And I was reading this, and I was thinking, whoa, you know, Which, of course, kind of fits in what I've been saying all along. I can guarantee you that when Beyonce gets home, she's not interested in dressing up in all those outfits and prancing around and singing and wiggling. She's interested in getting sweats on and playing with her baby and going to bed. And not that kind of going to bed. She's interested in going to sleep. And, you know, you could say, looking at it from the outside, which who knows what, you could say that, well, okay, if Beyonce was Beyonce at home, you know, I don't think there'd be much chance that Jay-Z would be stepping out on her, whether he did or not. See, this is the thing about all of this. I'm just not sure, because there hasn't been any real pronouncement. There's been rumors swirling. There hasn't been any real pronouncement. And there's certainly a lot of accusations flying on this album, but it's an album. Maybe there's been some rumors, and I mean, it's obviously an extremely emotive topic. Adultery is what we're talking about. And maybe Beyonce just decided she was going to do an album on that because it was fierce. But the whole time I was reading about this album, I was just, I kind of, yeah, well, maybe it's kind of the standard stuff, or maybe it's just great marketing. You know, maybe it's just, so who knows what it is. It certainly would fit within the genre of all the context that I have been exploring with regards to women and men and gender and roles and reactions and feelings of obligation and withdrawals and all those things that I've talked about over the last multiple weeks. But, you know, there has also been some overtures. I think Beyonce referred to Jay-Z as her beautiful husband or something like that. And so, you know, when some people have said, well, they've moved past it, you know, okay, so. And he is actually was on the Lemonade movie thing, and it's was streamed on his service to begin with, which makes him money, and, you know, so whether it is or not, who actually knows? Unless Jay-Z and Beyonce decide to say something about it. But they, rightly so, seem to be fairly tight-lipped about their relationship, and good for them, because I'm sure privacy is a very difficult thing to find when you're at that level. So, you know, who knows? But I'm just amazed that the Bayhive, you know, as soon as one woman even joked about being Betty with the good hair, I mean, it just erupted. And poor... and that woman's name was Rachel Roy, and poor Rachel Ray got backlash on it, too. I'm sure she's sitting over there going, hey, I'm not even, that isn't even my name, you know? Yeah. Which, that's a whole really interesting thing. Those who feel empowered by the internet to gnash their teeth and rip and tear, to dehumanize and threaten. You know, it's... That's very interesting. How quickly we decide between us and them, and them are so worthless that anything we can imagine to destroy them is worth doing, or at least threatening to do. So it's that's a whole other topic. I actually have a topic today. And it's pretty short, but it was kind of interesting. When I read it, I went, oh, well, yeah, there you go. That's kind of another way of saying it. It's kind of an interesting approach. And the title of the article was Why So Many Smart People Aren't Happy. The author was Joe Pinsker. And it's pretty interesting. He was talking to Raj Rahunathan. Rajunathan, maybe. I don't know. He's a professor of marketing at the University of Texas at Austin's Macomb School of Business. I think they need another name. And he's trying to figure out why many accomplished people in business do not seem to be happy. And what is it that brings us happiness? What is it that brings us fulfillment? And so he had kind of, you know, some interesting points. And I thought, well, yeah, that's good. That's good. He had said in here that there are three things once one's basic needs are met. And that's very important. I mean, we as Americans, with our first world problems, don't always understand that statement. Once one's basic needs are met, someplace safe, food. What is the other one? Someplace safe to sleep, food, and freedom from terror, or something like that. I can't remember. I mean, if you've got those things in the mix, according to the standard lore, and it's very difficult. Now, what is interesting in all of that is that the threshold that you would say those things are met, I have food, I have shelter, I have a reasonable sense of safety, the threshold at where those are met is actually much lower overseas than it is in America. You know, in America, if we can't get our favorite McDonald's fries anytime we want to, well, we're not getting our needs met. In the Philippines, those thresholds are much lower. A lot of the Filipinos are just plain grateful for food. And what's interesting is even though their thresholds are lower, the Filipinos typically are a very happy race of people. They're content, you know, they're warm, they're outgoing, they're fun to be around, very enjoyable to be around, you know, polite, gracious, whole bit. But they're saying once those are met, then academic literature points to these as the ingredients for happiness: having meaningful social relationships. And I absolutely agree with that. I had breakfast with a buddy today. It was fabulous. I enjoy it very much, very much, very much. So having meaningful social relationships is one thing. Being good at whatever it is one spends one's days doing. And the third one is having the freedom to make life decisions independently. So the guy in this article says, well, you know, if that was it, that was the sum total of it, then richer, educated people, they should be fine. You know, and these business people that have worked hard and achieved everything that they could need to achieve, and they're at the top of their game, and, you know, they have mastery over their stuff, and ta-da, they should be happy. Guy said he was running into a lot of them that weren't happy. And so he's been studying that, and he said one of the things that he finds is that there is an attitude that's important in all of this. That it's not just you have those things that we just mentioned, that we have meaningful social relationships. Although if you don't have those, it's harder to be happy. It's not just that you spend your days doing something that you're good at, although that certainly contributes. If you feel like you're going in, you're putting in a good day's work for the dollar you're getting paid, and it's you're being treated fairly, that's good. I mean, honestly, I love writing, and if I could just do anything, I would sit home and write. But I'm getting my mail. But because for this season, I am useful in certain capacities, then I'm happy to do that. A lot of the reason I'm happy to do that is because I am appreciated at work, and I go in and I feel like I'm doing a good job, and they keep paying me, so I take that as a measure that I am doing a good job since I'm on a month-to-month contract with them, and that does contribute to my sense of contentment. And when something goes wrong, certainly there's a little stuff that churns up within, but heretofore been able to go in, get that taken care of, and then it's like, hey, thank you, Jesus. So, and then the last one is the freedom to make life decisions independently. And of course, as a white guy in tech, I certainly have a lot of freedom there. So I agree with all those things, but this guy also added another one that I definitely agree with. And I think you can map it in a different way than the way he maps it. I think he kind of sanitizes it in a way that you sort of miss really what's going on. And what he said is, for him, it comes down to an attitude. And he said he would add a fourth after basic necessities have been met. It is the attitude or worldview that you bring to life, and that worldview can be characterized just for simplicity in one of two fashions. One extreme is a kind of scarcity-minded approach that my win is going to come at someone else's loss, which make you engage in social comparisons. And the other view is what I would call a more abundance-oriented approach, that there's room for everyone to grow. Now that's an interesting way to assign terminology to it. I think it's very close to the terminology that I might assign to it, and the terminology I might assign to it, if you haven't guessed by now, is flesh versus spirit. Because in this scarcity mindset, what you're doing is you're looking around and you're saying, I have to win. It has to be me. I need these resources. And he goes on to say, I'm not trying to argue in the book that the scarcity mindset is either shallow or completely useless. If you're caught in a war zone, if you're poverty in a poverty-stricken area, if you're fighting for your survival, if you're in a competitive sport like boxing, the scarcity mindset does play a very important role. And I would add to that, well, the abundant mindset, i.e. the mindset of the spirit, i.e. the mindset that we are reaching out to others in generosity and kindness and grace and mercy, does play a very important role in the war zone, in poverty, in fighting for your survival. Maybe not so much in boxing. But then Jesus already told us how to deal with a sport like boxing, because he says if someone strikes you on one cheek, you should turn the other cheek to them. But this life in the spirit, where you are looking beyond yourself and serving others and being gracious and kind to each other, not because you're afraid, not because you think yourself worthless, because that's just flesh too, but because you're genuinely interested in people, is really the thing that pays the benefits. Because scarcity, to me, sounds like flesh, and abundance sounds like spirit. Especially since Jesus said, I am come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. So anyway, so it was an interesting, it was interesting to see this guy talking about scarcity versus abundant. And then he also went on to say, you know, I think as intelligent beings, we need to recognize that some of the vestiges in our evolutionary tendencies might be holding us back. He says, if I'm at an advertising agency, for example, or in software design, those are the kinds of fields where it is now being shown in quite a lot of studies that you actually perform better if you don't put yourself under the scarcity mindset, if you don't worry about the outcomes and enjoy the process of doing something rather than the goal. And I would argue that if you have to have a flesh mindset to succeed in something that you're doing, you're probably doing the wrong thing. Because flesh breeds flesh. And while you may succeed in that narrow area where you're applying those flesh techniques and it's helping you to get going, there's going to be a whole other host of areas that surround you in which you will not succeed. Because that flesh characteristic is going to spill over into others and it's not good. He also says, on one hand, we are hardwired to focus on negative things. And I thought, sure, because that's the flesh. But he thinks that we're also hardwired to be seeking a sense of happiness. I do believe that. And a desire to flourish, to be the best we can. And I do believe that, too, because the spirit at all times is whispering and whispering and saying, it's better over here. It's better. Come. So anyways, it was an interesting little article, and I picked up a couple of things from it. And as I said, I'm always interested I'm always interested in articles that are trying to characterize, trying to categorize this idea of flesh and spirit. One of the other interesting things that he was talking about is he said, one thing that has really helped me in this regard is a concept that I call the dispassionate pursuit of passion. And in the book, and basically, the concept boils down to not tethering your happiness to the achievement of outcomes, which is what the flesh is going to try to do all the time. It's going to try to you know, say, oh, if you could just get this, then you'd be happy. If you could just get that, and then you'd be happy. And then you have it for a while, and then the flesh is going to start saying, well, you're not really very happy, are you? And just shove that person out of the side so you can get to this. But he says the reason why, in his opinion, the reason why it's important not to tie happiness to outcomes is that outcomes by themselves don't really have an unambiguously positive or negative effect on your happiness. Yes, there are some outcomes, you get a terminal disease or your child dies, that are pretty extreme, but let's leave those out. But if you think about it, the breakup that you had with your childhood girlfriend, or you broke an arm or were in a hospital bed for 2 months, when they occurred, you might have felt, oh my goodness, this is the end of the world. I'm never going to recover from it. But as it turns out, we're very good at recovering from those things. And not just that, but those very events that we thought were really extremely negative and are in fact pivotal in making us grow and learn. Because, again, the flesh is going to pull away. It's going to draw back from anything that is painful. It's going to try to convince you that you just need to have the good life all the time and you don't have to suffer and you don't have to. And even if there's no possibility of those things happening, it can keep you churned up. It can keep you churned up and worried enough about them that it can keep you listening to the flesh. Whereas for me, the people who something like that happens to them and they say, you know, I'm in the hands of God, we're just going to take this one step forward at a time. What's interesting is that I think if you're in either the mindset of oh, why did this happen to me? Or, well, I'm sure it will all work out. Eventually, things do, for the most part, work out. You do get past those valleys. You do get out of shadow. Except that I think in the process, if you just churn on bitterness the whole time that you're in that shadow, it provides a platform where it's easier for you to churn in bitterness. But if you stay in this mindset of spirit of it's okay, I'm just going to take this one step at a time, then when you get out of it, you know, that might help too. Anyways, he concludes by saying, ultimately, you can't force people to adopt an abundance mindset. They're going to have to select it themselves through self-exploration, soul-searching, and looking at the science. Then some people consciously arrive at a more socialistic way of living by choice. That's the way I think this is going to work out best for capitalism to kind of flip itself on its head to arrive at that. I mean, so he sees capitalism as a great thing. And there are some really wonderful things about capitalism, provided the people who are engaging in capitalism are driven by the spirit and not by the flesh. Because when you get driven by the flesh, you end up with situations like The Big Short, the movie. We watched that a couple of weeks ago. It's fabulous. It was fabulous. I recommend it highly to everyone as a way of saying, you know what? Maybe we just don't want to give everybody free reign, because there are some people out there, you know, who are driven by flesh. And at this point, I'm really just babbling because I'm tired. And so I just need to shut this down, say, have a good week. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.